Door, oh.
The gavel. Oh, my goodness.
I call this meeting to order. Please stand for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have a roll call?
Councilmember Deedy?
Here.
Councilmember Morgan?
Here.
Councilmember Edelman?
Here.
Councilmember Pepper?
Here.
Councilmember Weber? Mayor, Councilmember Weber did email today he will not be able to attend tonight. Commissioner Senecal?
Here.
Commissioner McCain?
Here.
Commissioner Amber?
Seated.
Commissioner Ammons?
Here.
Commissioner Ekberg?
Here.
Commissioner LaConte?
So I think we'll just turn this over to Barbara and she can move ahead.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. So we're on our April 12th tab, and hopefully everybody has their insert in the book. And if you don't, I've got a couple of extras. Right here. There you go. So our last meeting, we did the natural environment appendix and element. Tonight's meeting, we're going to be doing housing policies. And before we get started on that, I just wanted to give you a little status on where we've been and where we need to go in this process. In the introduction chapter that we reviewed, there's the plan outline at a glance, and that lists the elements and their primary function. So we've basically got an introduction with 11 elements. We went through the introduction that contained the vision statement. We had great discussion on that. We did the community character, or the demographics chapter, and we did that with the housing appendix to get the data kind of in our minds about who lives here and who might live here in the future and the people that we're actually doing this long-range plan for. You should have it in, I think, your February. Let's double-check, though. No, it's going to be the January. January tab is your introduction. And the appendix for the housing element that we went over is in the March. We talked about that in the March meeting. Okay. So natural environment. So basically the takeaway here is we've got 11 chapters, and after tonight we will have done 5 chapters. We're making progress. Next month you'll be seeing capital facilities and economic development. One of the changes from the outline is as we are working through the capital facilities element, we have pulled out parks, recreation, and trails. It was in the old capital facilities. We're going to give that a standalone chapter. So that's a change from when we originally talked about this plan outline. So we, after we do capital facilities and economic development, and now the capital facilities that you see will be addressing police, fire, school, and administration. That's what will be in the capital facilities. In June, I hope to bring you the land use chapter, and in July, the transportation chapter. Then we will have a complete draft plan to begin to we'll take that out into the public in July, and then start back with the Planning Commission holding public hearing and running through that formal process to make recommendation to City Council. So that's the status, and I do want to say we're in pretty good shape with most everything. We've got rough drafts. The one that is not complete is the transportation element. And I think some of the council members are aware of this. I don't know if I've discussed it with planning commissioners yet, but the consultant that we had hired to do the draft work on the whole plan, transportation planning is extremely specialized, and they did had a sub consultant to do the transportation part. We terminated the contract that we had with the primary consultant to do the comp plan. We were really not satisfied with the product that we were getting, and so we're doing this in-house, and I think it's going very well. But we need to contract directly with the consultant that is 90% done with the transportation element. So we put a lot of money into this particular consultant. They've done a terrific job, and I'm bringing contract with a recommendation for approval to council so that we hopefully won't drop that momentum that we have going, because we need that finished so we can get this plan done. So that being said, we are going to talk housing tonight. I'm going to just kind of go, some of the planning commissioners were not here when we did the demographics and the appendix on the housing, and plus I think it's a good refresher for us to think about the 4 pages worth of housing policies are coming out of what we compiled and the assessment of the technical data in the housing appendix and in the demographics. So we're trying to address the policy framework for the issues that we identified. And so it's important for, as we have this policy discussion, for you all to say, I don't see how that really addresses that issue. Barb, we need to go think of something different. Or perhaps now that you've had time to think about the work that's been produced and reviewed a couple of times, maybe we've missed something and we need to go back. This is the perfect time as we're doing this working draft workshop type work. But in the data, what we found is we have an aging housing stock, so we probably want to address that aging housing stock. In the appendix, there's a table 6-2 in the appendix. 15% of the housing stock in Black Diamond was built in 1939 or earlier. Almost 10% was built between 1940 and 1969. 67% was built between 1970 and 1999. So aging housing needs to be addressed either with policies to reinvest and keep that housing, old housing stock, in a livable manner, or you're going to be replacing everything. And so then that other issue with the housing data is we have no diversity in our housing stock. 98% is single-family residential, detached. So we know that with the demographics that we studied, the people per household is declining, so households are getting smaller. And that's something for us to think about as we're thinking about what kind of housing stock should we be building in policy framework to create regulation for in our zoning codes. We know the family composition is changing. We have fewer households with children. We know that our population is aging. We're going to have probably more households with senior people, potentially those with disability. We have more renters, and we don't have any special needs housing. So we kind of have this really a lot of challenges in terms of how do we want to address that lack of diversity in our housing stock. And then the third takeaway is the affordability issue. And in that housing appendix in Table 6-8, we have in the way that HUD breaks up housing affordability is in a category very low, low, moderate, middle, and high. And what those categories do is they say a person, 30%, very low earner, income earner, is earning 30% below the area median income. In Black Diamond, we have 11% of people that are in that very low category. 11% of the housing stock that fits those people, that they can afford that. Yes, excuse me. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. All of these figures.
I was looking at the 2009 comp plan, and I noticed that a lot of their numbers that they got were from the 2000 census.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if these numbers are from the 2010?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And 2010 census, and then also the other census product, because the decennial census is, the Census Bureau is trying to get away from that. So you're seeing these American Consumer Survey, you're seeing these smaller census come out, and that product that is called the American Consumer Survey. It gives you more up-to-date instead of waiting every 10 years. So there's a mix of the 2010 and then this American, which is a five-year rolling, usually a 2009 to 2014 snapshot. So, yeah, we went through and updated all the data. Low affordability for low is 31 to 50%, and we've got 7% of our housing stock that people in the low-income category can afford. 24% housing stock for moderate, and that's a 51 to 80%. Then you've got 28% of the housing stock currently available for middle, 81 to 120%, and 30% of the housing stock in Black Diamond is affordable to people that are high-income earners that earn 120% plus the area median income. So we really have stock for the middle and high, and you have to remember, moderate, usually if it's a decent house, they're going to go for a low. They take some of that low-income housing if it's available. So the affordability is another issue. And then we looked at the cost burden as an indicator. And I thought this was really interesting because 47% are cost burdened, which means they pay 30% or more of their income for housing. That's a HUD standard if you're paying 30% or more. And in some cases, a lot of people are paying 50%, which means they have no money to provide for the other needs that they have are very limited. But of that almost half that are cost burdened, 97% are homeowners. So we often think about cost burden and people that are struggling as always renters, not always the case. But that was a very interesting. So if we want to promote homeownership, if that's what, you know, the policy direction is, we're still having an issue with homeowners being able to afford houses. So,
Mayor Benson, there was an article in the paper over the weekend talking about how that the younger population is deciding that they really do want to buy houses, and so they're moving out of downtown Seattle area because it's so expensive and are actually really looking for housing. You've probably seen that now.
Yeah. So that is what, and then just one quick thing on the master plan development and the development agreement, because obviously that's going to infuse a whole new dynamic when those houses are built. In the development agreement, page 107, the housing types, they have a provision that after each phase of the village's MPD is completed, the city shall prepare an analysis of affordable housing citywide. And then it goes on to say, dwelling units shall be deemed affordable housing if the upper median income limits, as determined by King County, are satisfied. We're still going to have a gap in those lower, a big gap. So.
Dave Amber, a lot of that's probably because the housing on Lake Sawyer and those neighborhoods up there, those are pricey homes compared to every other house in Black Diamond. And let's see, I read obviously a different article than you did. It was saying the exact opposite, that kids today are flocking more to the cities to get away from the commuting and to live in the town, like in Seattle.
Mayor Benson, the article I read was talking about the millennials, that up to this point now they have small families or are wanting to have families, but the younger kids are still wanting to live close to where they work and not have to commute. But the millennials that have traditionally not bought housing now want to buy housing and move out from the city.
So are millennials, what, 20, 30-year-olds? 30s? Okay. Yeah, figures.
So my first question for you all is, do you think that we've missed identifying an issue here on our housing? Is there something else that we should be targeting?
Erica here. Two things. One thing is that not all aging stock is the same. Some aging stock, it was better constructed in the first place and is still fine housing. I'm sort of thinking also about diversity. Have we got any idea how much of the housing in Black Diamond, what percent of the housing is mobile homes at this time? We should, because it was a big issue in the past. At one point, it was 65% before we brought in Lake Sawyer, and then we had a moratorium.
It's page one.
Is it page one?
This is Janie. Just as a comment, we have the senior housing, King County Housing, across the highway from us, mm-hmm. which I would suspect that and Cedarbrook are the big numbers.
Right.
That's where the mobile homes are. There's a few up here on Lawson Hills, but and a few maybe even around Lake Sawyer on the off lake.
There are in Washington State law, you cannot discriminate against mobile homes on single family lots. They have to be constructed. You have the ability through your policy and regulations to require that they be affixed to the ground, that they have skirting or garage or something of that nature, but you cannot discriminate from the placement of mobile homes.
Can I ask you a question about mm-hmm. Can I ask a question about encouraging preservation of existing housing stock? How can the city do that, and is that even land use? I'm a little confused by that.
Yeah, that's where there's overlap, and I've had other planning commissioners ask me the same thing in other places. It's like, at what point does this land use plan become a bigger item?
And does it mean the city kicking in money for people to fix their houses? What does that mean?
No, but what one way that you could do that is your regulatory framework. You look at whether or not there are, how strict is your code language, or is there anything that is promoting rehabilitation, or do you have perhaps the city in policy may want to partner and create a opportunity for a housing grant, you know, a housing program that finds grant funds for rehabilitation. There are federal and state rehabilitation monies, and some cities do that. They start programs for that purpose.
Councilmember Pepper. Houses 50 years or older, do we have a historic, a designated historic district?
We do.
Okay, and we have ordinances covering that.
Well, what we have is, and this is that's a really good lead-in to the housing affordability, too, because we have design standards, and design standards are a good thing. We've got a historic designated area where we've got adopted standards. And in our regulations, we can apply those standards. So that's a two-edged sword. You know, you've got, you want your development in your historic area to look a certain way. You know, you're trying to create a city that fits the character. But on the other hand, if those regulations become so costly, then you're working against providing affordable housing. So, we have design standards for our historic area.
Do those designs, Councilmember Pepper, do those design standards create an avenue for funding?
They do not.
Commissioner Amber, I don't think we need to, I don't like telling somebody that, you know, their house is a pile of garbage and they can't live in it anymore. I mean, that's kind of their determination. And if you're in a neighborhood where there are covenants, then you know, you've got to abide by those because that's part of the agreement when you bought it. But in the historic or even the non-historic areas, in the uncovenanted areas, I don't think the city should be coming in and telling people your house is unlivable because it doesn't quite match up to the current standards. So I think that's something we should be careful of not doing.
Ms. Janey, I think what we're talking about here, just so that we're all kind of on the same page, we're talking Railroad Avenue, where the bakery is, where Mike's Deli is, down Roberts Drive, where First Avenue, well, all of, and you know, where you live, all that property, and then going west on Roberts Drive into Morganville, all of that is considered the historic districts. And so, no, on this side of 169? 169's right there. Is part of Lawson Hill?
I'll have to bring the maps.
I mean, we do have historical buildings here that are right on the highway. But I think by and large, when you talk about the historical district, it's west of 169. And I think all that we should be, maybe what we should be addressing here is, and I don't know the design standards, is what we should be talking about, but we already have design standards in place, and the planning department is doing the best they can do to enforce our standards so that if a new building goes, let's say somebody does build a house over in Morganville, it needs to fit into the design standards of the historic part of town. They can't go put in some modern monolithic building.
And it also applies back to Commissioner Amber, applies to new construction. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to, city isn't going to go in and tell someone, so new construction, and they are guidelines.
Yeah.
So. Well, let's. Well, that's in the rehabilitation, or yeah, their aging housing stock, not always, as council member points out here, is not always deficient housing, but it is an indicator. Old housing that can usually be an indicator that it's you've got deficient housing that may if it's not rehabilitated. Will just get more and more in decline until the point where it is potentially not livable or not healthy. You know, let's say if it's got lead-based paint walls or something like that.
And then somebody will come in and buy it and build something new there.
So, Councilmember Deedy, so a good place to start to look at where homes have been built already on Second Avenue. There's three houses. One's already been built. It's been there for just over almost 2 years. And then there's two other homes being built on Second Avenue that are good examples of how they blend right in with the old homes that are there, where you really can't tell that they were just, you know, out of place, you know, a big five-story home put in or something. You know, I mean, they blend in very well. So it's a good start for everybody to go and look at and see how the city is implementing their plan to keep Old Town looking a certain way.
I must have misunderstood because I thought somewhere in this housing element plan, in the comprehensive plan, it was kind of trying to steer the city
That'll be good. If we start working through this, maybe there's some policy language that isn't clear, and we need to fix it. Maybe you did. Yeah, good.
I'd like Commissioner Ekberg. Before we get into the policy part, I have a number of comments that I don't want to waste your time on in the appendix. Was not here for the February reading of that. Where should I address those comments? Just have.
Well, go ahead, and I mean, I think it might be useful. It's something that, please share that with us.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
I mean, we've already talked about it, so I don't want to waste.
No.
For the really trivial things like spelling, I'll just email this to you.
Uh-huh. Thanks.
There's some minor formatting issues. The first question I have is on page 2, the table at the top of the page.
Mm-hmm.
It says since 2000. Could you have it's really unclear what the actual date range is. It could be 2013, or it could be maybe 2012, based on the source, or it could be 2015.
Okay, that is supposed to be from the range is 2000 to present date.
But present date is today. But
well,
it's not really as of today.
This one, actually, if you look at the citation below, it's to 2013. So it's 2000 to 2013 because I used the ACS data from 2009 to 2013. So, sure, I can put 2000 to 2013.
Makes a little more sense. And really kind of a minor point is the first paragraph, the second to last sentence, it says approximately half of the state's housing stock was built, blah, blah, blah. If you look at that, 67% is more like two-thirds.
Okay.
Minor. And on page 3, have table 6-4, it has the total housing units as 1754.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to page 2 and look at the number at that table we were just looking at, the total there is 1699. Now, I'm not going to quibble about it too much, but I just want to...
You know, I don't think we caught that one. I don't think we caught that one. So, because it's the same data source, so 1754, yeah.
Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great.
All right. And this is, I don't know, maybe I'm getting into the nuts and bolts. On that same page, page 3, table 6-3,
mm-hmm.
if you take these percentages and add them up, they'd, you know, some of them are pretty close.
They won't be 100%.
Yeah.
No.
But when they're off by 2.5%,
well,
that's kind of high. And another one's off by about 2.5% on the other side.
Yeah, but it's...
I don't know what you...
That one we can't do much about okay. because it's just...
I figured.
Yeah, the way that... The methodology, that would get into the census data methodology and how they... I know it's never 100%, but...
I'm not going to go there.
Yeah.
But I wanted to point it out.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the next comment is on page 5. The second paragraph. In the middle of that it says... there will be 7,674 households
mm-hmm.
in the city
yeah.
in 2035. Now, that's taking into account, where was the other number? Down on the third paragraph, at the end of the third paragraph, it says there will be adding 6,050 units
mm-hmm.
during that time period. So if you take the numbers of households on pages 1, 2, and 3, and add the 6,050 to the, you kind of get different numbers there.
You do, because you're talking about units and households, and they're two different things.
Yeah. There's households in those other tables
okay.
as well as units.
Well, I can check my math.
So the 6,050 is?
That's units.
Units.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could just kind of look at that.
Sure, I will. Thank you.
And then on page 7, the middle of the second paragraph, maybe I misread this, but it says, and this is a really long sentence, it seems like that the house, 47% of the households pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Than 30%, or is it less than 30%?
More than 30%. That's the cost burden.
Because if I'm looking at, it's on the next, on the table that I think it's referring to, is the table on the next page, page 8. And if you look at that, it says no cost burden, 47% or less.
Right.
So
right.
Wouldn't it be less?
It's less. If they're not cost burdened, then they're paying 30% or less of their income for housing. If they are cost burdened, they're paying 30% or more.
I'll take your word for it. I misread it.
So you see that? Yeah. But I'll take another look at that, too.
It's a really wordy sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would help break
well, it. Well, I may be able to do something with it.
And there's what's it, 6-4. Okay, and then it talks about mortgages. It says pay more or less than 30% towards rent. four mortgages, and 97% of those residents own their own homes. Page 6-4 on page 3. Table 6-4. Page 3. And I don't see, where's the 97%? I see 94%.
So wait a minute, you lost me.
Okay.
Where do we?
We're starting on page 7.
Yeah.
All right. And it says where I was questioning whether it's more or less. Keep on reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it says then 30% towards rent or mortgages, and this is the question I have. 97% of those residents own their own homes. See table 6-4.
Okay.
And I go to table 6-4, and I don't see a 97% figure.
I think we have the wrong. I think we have the wrong table cited. But let me look at that and reread it, and we'll see what the problem is. But now that you've directed my attention, I can go through that.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right on if you look at table 6-3 and take the 2004 owner and renter occupied, add those two numbers together, you get 97.6%.
Okay.
So that's probably, you're probably,
yeah.
Right. That's what
also,
most of
all. This is Jamie. If you look on table 6-4, the homeowner vacancy rate is 3%.
Yeah, which is. Right. I just love going through these appendices and all the data tables and making sure all the numbers match up. And I'd be happy to do it again because I maybe made some errors, math errors. But let me do that again, Commissioner. Okay. Thank you. So do we want to, on the housing element, how would the work group like to go through this? Page by page or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the way we've been doing it.
Okay.
I wanted to read this over to you guys because I read this paragraph, the second one down, what talks about vitality, and I think I was sticking on our whole discussion that we had before about vitality. So I went and looked up at some comprehensive planning data from the Commerce Department, and I thought, oh, this makes a lot of sense. It says the Growth Management Act states that the housing element ensures the vitality and character of established residential neighborhoods. Character refers to the area's unique features or qualities, and vitality refers to the long-term contribution that housing provides to the area's overall welfare and prosperity. And I think that gets in a little bit to, you know, I'm always talking about quality and that the actual savings from the housing comes from how long you can extend the maintenance program that has to happen out beyond the mortgage, because that's the savings, and that's the savings that builds wealth, and that savings that builds wealth is what puts the people who are in that house in a better financial position, which in the long term makes the whole work better. Oh, cool.
Cool. If it clears up a problem.
It makes me understand what they mean better.
Well, there's nothing wrong with having some common definitions in this.
Well, I love the way you said that. Yeah, I have no problem with paper
writing. Especially for men.
So in this introduction then, you know, really We're focusing on trying to provide available, affordable, and adequate housing for everyone on all economic and social spectrum that's consistent with the character of the community. So, and then that second paragraph that we talked about, then we go into the context and strategies. Go ahead.
Commissioner Amber, now, you went through a whole bunch of numbers about the percentage of Black Diamond has this staggering percentage of this particular type of housing. I think it was medium to upper income house. Right. And then we're also talking about preserving neighborhood characteristics, but then you also have to destroy neighborhood characteristics to get this diversified housing in if it's not here.
Diverse housing stock, and you take a single family detached. We've done some things already in the city. We've allowed accessory dwelling units, so we're allowing like a small cottage house to be on the same property, which doesn't necessarily take away from the character. Another thing that nobody really enjoys talking about is you allow for higher densities, smaller lot sizes. Those are ways that you wouldn't necessarily be destroying the character if you do it right. But are you buying that?
One of the things that that I've seen in some places is where duplexes or fourplexes are arranged in such a way that visually across the landscape they look like a single one single family house. It has to do with where you are, where and how you arrange the garages. And I know my sister designed one in Seattle that had the garage in the middle, and then the house was built as if you tore the walls down between the apartments, it would have been a single family house, but it had like townhouses upstairs, downstairs, two halves that were mirror images of each other. So it was a duplex, so it's more dense housing in the same spot.
Commissioner McCain, one of the ways that has been discussed to increase density and also increase accommodation for people with disabilities, seniors, people with other physical limitations, is to go up with more density, but to go up vertically, because you can get people that can use an elevator and different kind of accesses to get everything on a one level. The duplex townhome theory looks good, and it works well only, though, for those people who can really manage 10 or 12 stairs at a time. So there is some advantage to going up higher and to get everybody's living accommodation on one level.
Yeah, but there is, but then there's also a fire department that goes into that when you do that.
We do have height restrictions, 35 feet right now on in code, and maybe there's an opportunity if it meets the fire standards to go higher.
Commissioner Senek, can I ask another question on the introduction? The third bullet down. quite sure why we need a policy to provide housing for foster care families. I don't know of any foster care families that I know of that are using public assistance to be foster care parents. They're just doing it because they can.
Yeah.
Well, so, group homes and foster care lists here, making sure we have enough housing for group homes and foster care facilities. I'm thinking, explain that to me.
Yeah, that came out of the Growth Management Act. So
we're going to make it affordable as a city. That says more money. That city's going to pony up so somebody can move in as a foster family. I don't really know what it's talking about.
Well, sufficient land, which means that we're going to allow zoning for those group homes or foster.
I can see group homes, but you don't have to zone for a foster family.
Well, group homes are, it's like a definition. I need to get that glossary for you. I mean, I think it's probably fine just to say group homes and other special, because foster care homes aren't necessarily classified as group homes. Group homes are bigger.
Does an adult family home need to fit in certain zoning?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Maybe you could just say group homes for all groups.
What struck me when I was reading these group homes, foster homes, senior assisted teen homes, some place to get addicts off the street, shelter for homeless, I'm thinking what we need to have here is we need to have a plan that says when we get to a certain population, according to some kind of countywide statistics, probably, which is the coordination element, when we get to that population, then we should be available. Then those facility for those things when it's our turn to take our fair share. That's what I'm saying. We probably don't need them when we have under 4,000 people. 4,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't it go, like, if you're really small, you don't have to provide for that? Because the statute says
that every city and county will allow for that and be able to have capacity in regulation to take the fair share. So there are targets in the countywide, but it's not based population based.
Councilmember Pepper, I have noticed that this whole four pages is really general. So when you talk about fair share and different types of housing facilities, and then you say there's no population regulation, well, what are the standards for taking your fair share? I mean, where do we find those?
Countywide arena, where every city is going to strive to meet their target for fair share. So it's not like they're saying, okay, you city have to have 10 units set aside. I mean, as a policy board decision makers, you could do that if you wanted to, but you probably wouldn't want to. But it's not required under the countywide.
It would be, it would be okay if somebody wanted. wanted to come in and do it, the city's not going to say, no, you can't do it. You can do it over in this section of town and buy a piece of property over in this section of town and you can have a foster home or whatever there.
Yeah. What that's really getting at is that cities can't zone them out because that was happening historically. So in the context and strategy, we tried to set the stage that we, you know, are committed to planning for. We're committed to doing the things that Growth Management Act says we must do, and that we are also committed to doing it, not just because we're supposed to, because it's the right thing to do. So that's kind of where we're trying to set that. Again, it reiterates housing needs for all segments of the population, low income, special needs. We're understanding how housing supply affects land use, commute patterns, economy. This is a little statement about how we're trying to put in this comprehensive plan all of those pieces together that are relevant to housing. We affirm in that second paragraph that we can be instrumental. That gets back to Commissioner Senegal's, you know, like, when is this, where are we crossing the line in a land use? And we're not going to be a housing, the city, very few cities, except for, you know, Seattle or something. We're not probably going to create a housing department. But we can do things to be instrumental in facilitating, and that's what we're going to try to figure out. We're limited in terms of our funding to do things, but we look for options to maybe partner, build stronger pathways between the housing groups that are funded with grant funding. I don't know, but those are usually sort of the typical things that you look at. You try to make sure that your zoning is fair and equitable and to support housing and lot sizes, that sort of thing. So that's how it gets into of comp plan facilitating housing. And then maybe there's going to be program approach. And just like the city taking on looking at assessing affordable housing periodically as we look at comp plan update, things like that will facilitate. And so that's what this context and strategy was trying to address. We're also on page 2. We're recognizing that housing correlates with economic, and you've said this over and over again, with economic sustainability and jobs, because we know that it does. Well, you know, if,
well, something has to support the house.
Yeah.
And something has to support the city.
Yeah.
Jobs and staying in town, spending their money in town, would support a city, then none of these cities around the country would be in such financial hardship. You need to bring other people's money in so that for them to just leave it here and then go back to where they're from. Some kind of you need a tourist draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, another thing you don't realize is if you want enough jobs in the city so people can work where they live, you've got to
let's see, do this is copied off the 2009 comp plan, right?
It's pretty different. This one's pretty different.
Okay.
Well, yeah, but we have the appendix, so part of this is part of the appendix and part of this.
And this is all the policy statements.
Yeah,
as opposed to the narrative.
Yeah, we chopped out a bunch of the narrative and added quite a few more policies than we had in 2009.
Yeah. So we're trying to get a little more meat in here to try to implement in our regulations.
Okay.
And it is general. I mean, that you're right. There's general, very general, but comp plan policy language. It's like we have to find the sweet spot about general enough to be flexible, but not too general so that it fits everything that comes in the door. That's the challenge in policy.
I mean, all of this is going to change radically over the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, our housing densities and everything is going to completely go haywire from the picture we're looking at right now.
I don't know that housing affordability is going to get any. I think that'll still be an issue. I think diversity depends on how the MPDs build out in terms of their mix types of units.
Okay, yeah, that was kind of what I was asking on was part of this in that 2009 comp plan where so much of it has to be this type of housing, so much has to be this type of housing.
Was that that wasn't in the 2009?
There is some countywide housing needs
statistics that are in here that may or may not be relevant anymore. It talks about incomes back in 2009 or probably earlier than that because this was all worked on a couple of years before it was actually ever approved, I'm sure. There's a distribution of low and moderate income housing, countywide affordable housing policies. There's a table here with the Black Diamond affordable housing, which goes back into that other element that we've already discussed with all those tables and everything. Back in the 2000 census, it identified 469 households in the city as low and moderate income. That changes over the years.
You thought you saw something where it said that we had to have a certain percentage in the mix of housing?
I don't recall if it was a certain an identified percentage, but there's probably some vague wording.
Okay.
It's Janie again. It's on page 6-6 of the 2009 comp plan. It says, using the CPP guidelines for planning for affordable housing, 37% of all new units should be, quote, affordable to households with 80% of King County median income, end quote. Specifically, 17% should be affordable to households with 50 to 80% of median income, and 20% affordable to households with less than 50% of median income. There's a bunch of statistics on that page. But I think
those are
our targets. And now, and they're in our new version of it. So
that's the word targeting.
That should be built in because the 2009 comp plan controls the MPDs, right? Because they were done after 2009.
I wouldn't say controls because the one thing the 2009 update it was adopted I think right before the MPD was approved, but it was drafted with the MPDs in mind. It was kind of a
Are the MPDs vested to the 2009 comp plan?
You don't vest the comp plan.
Okay.
You vest to regulations,
correct.
But not you don't ever vest to policies.
So then we're still on page two. Anybody have any comments? I mean, we're goals. So the following goals, here's the intention, that we're intending to ensure suitable, decent, affordable, and alternative housing options. So that's what these goals and policies are intending to do. So when we read through those, we need to say, I guess, do they do that? So the first goal is ensure adequate housing for all current and future residents of Black Diamond by achieving and maintaining high-quality housing in neighborhoods. That's our first housing goal. Anybody have any comment on that? Mm-mm. So under the goal, then, we have 10 policies. So it's how what policies are we going to implement to achieve that goal? So promote a variety of residential densities and housing types. Encourage the preservation of existing housing stock and development standards that minimize housing costs.
I don't really know why, but when I read this, what I wrote down is it sounds like we're promoting cardboard boxes with tin roofs. I don't know.
Well, it seems like everything is geared towards high quality at somebody's expense.
That's, we don't want to do that. I mean, we want to find a balance, a good mix. You're right.
And I don't know that. I mean, I hate to say the market will dictate what happens when we're talking about people moving around. We don't know who's going to move out here, and to force somebody to build 5 blocks of high quality, inexpensive housing that people aren't going to come out here to move into because there's nothing out here for them to do except commute 3 or 4 hours to Kent or Seattle.
Well, Dave, if you look at H2, it says encourage the preservation of existing housing stock and development standards that minimize housing costs. So I don't think it's telling you that you have to build higher standard houses. This is a policy statement that tries to preserve the look of our city without it being high rises or apartments, or it's trying to minimize the changes to the look to our city. So I think you have to look at it from an overall perspective that this is going to be in place for till we do the next comp plan amendment. And then whatever has been built and whatever has happened up to that time, then this policy will change. This policy is a 5-year policy, so it will change in 5 years from now. Then we do another comp plan amendment, and then the policy changes based on who are the people on this committee, on these two committees? How is that policy going to change? So what we're saying today is what we're looking at. We want to preserve what we have, but we also want to encourage new homes that fit into the environment. And I don't think it says anywhere in here that we're trying to make it cost more money. I don't think it says
that. Well, no, I'm just saying because we want high-quality housing.
But that's what you want. You don't want somebody to build a little box with plywood. You want quality housing.
Right. You want that. But it also says development standards that minimize housing costs. So you're trying to – it just seems like a contradiction. I mean, you can get, decent quality at a cheap price, but – if you want high quality.
Maybe we should just say quality housing.
Maybe it's a high quality.
I'm going to try to bridge this gap. I want to thank Mayor Benson for what she said. And one of the things that that I have thought a lot about and also been to a few seminars on, the rehabbing the existing housing, rehabbing it in its historical, with its historical perspective, is actually sort of the most supreme recycling. And I'm thinking minimizing housing costs, maybe maximizing recycling instead.
It's a plot. Isn't that going to have a whole different connotation? Recycling, to most people, is save your aluminum cans and your bottles and all of that and recycle them. You don't normally hear it talked about as recycling on the housing market.
Commissioner Eckberg, how about instead of recycling, reuse? Mm-hmm. Something more like that has less of a connotation.
Well, Commissioner McCain, one of the issues with a lot of the old housing stock is that it has what's called functional obsolescence. You know, the doorways are obsolete because if you have to provide for somebody who's limited mobility, they have to have a 36-inch doorway. And a lot of times the older housing stock is very expensive to retrofit into something that can be used by all people of all different mobility levels. So as I agree, I agree with that whole thing that we want to try to reuse that. We have to really think about how some of those homes that were built here in town between 1900s and 1940s are really so far out of compliance and safety hazards, safety and all that, but it just doesn't work. It's a great idea, but I think it's difficult to implement.
And it's expensive.
Inexpensive.
On the other hand, there isn't really that many. Considering how many houses we're talking about here, it's not a very big percentage.
But they would stay as they are until somebody tears them down. I mean, if you go in to buy a 1930s home, you're buying it as is, but if you tear it down to build a new one, then you've got to upgrade it to current standards that look like the cardboard shack with the tin roof that you just pulled down.
That is not a design standard.
So, as somebody who's refurbishing a 1928 home, it's a pain in the neck, and it's very expensive. Yeah. So maybe the goal then, if we just cross out the word high, so we want to achieve and maintain quality housing and quality neighborhoods, quality housing. Is that okay? And so then with policy H2, are we okay with that as written?
Yeah.
Okay. So any of the other policies on page 2 that you guys want to talk about? Okay. Provide flexibility in zoning and subdivision regulations to encourage a diversity of owner and rental housing types to ensure capacity to accommodate growth. A diversity of types and styles should include attached and detached units.
No, all I'm looking for is a further explanation of that, because it seems like it's, what does that mean? It seems like, are there boundaries to that? H4.
So what does it mean, okay, the flexibility and allowing for different ownership or rental housing, attached and detached, accommodating growth. I think the question is what the boundaries on that would be determined through your...
How do you apply that?
Through your implementation of your... in your subdivision code and in your development regulations, in your zoning districts. That's how you would apply that.
So, like, for example, subdivision regulations, we're going to want to look at, if we adopt policy H4, we're going to look at our existing subdivision regulation to see if we are have the criteria that housing types are going to all be, let's say, for example, detached units. And same goes for our zoning code. If we're not allowing multi-unit housing anywhere in our zoning districts, that's how we would look at that and implement that.
Thank you for your comment.
Did I answer the question okay? I mean, it is broad.
It's
and
it's ongoing.
Yeah. On page 3 of 4, we go on with more policies under the first goal. Anybody have comments on policy H6 through H10?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Janie. I just question why we're talking about stick-built structures, because you either have a manufactured home or you have a site-built home.
Okay.
Which is a stick-built home. So I think it's redundant.
Let's cross that out.
I would just get rid of that.
Okay.
So take out the or stick-built.
Okay.
And then it makes sense.
Perfect. Anything else?
I just made a note here. It's Erica. How can a manufactured home match the fire retardant earthquake safe of a and wind safe of a stick built.
In the manufacturer's rules that they have to be constructed to meet the International Code Council standards. And so when they're placed on the lot, then the building code comes in and they have to meet those standards, tie downs
because that's, I just wanted to be sure this isn't inviting the stick built to come down to their level.
Oh, sure. No, it's not. Actually, in some cases, the stick built are a lower quality than a manufactured home, but that has to be built to be able to go on a freeway to get to wherever its location is. So.
So our second goal, encourage the availability of a wide range of affordable housing to meet the needs of households with varying economic status. So the first goal, we were really talking about the physical quality of housing characteristics. This second one is talking about this affordability issue, meeting the needs of households and different economic strata.
Council Member Pepper, I would like to go back to policy H8.
Okay.
Where it talks about transit hubs and transit station areas.
Mm-hmm.
I think about Renton and Federal Way. Are we having that here?
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
So housing
affordability to transit hubs?
Maybe we should cross out transit hubs. I mean, affordability with maybe, I guess what this was trying to say is that we need to plan affordable housing is going to be housing that has different transportation or mobility options. I think, I was just thinking that's perfect, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I will change policy H8. Anything more on 9 or 10? So the goal then down to the second goal and the policies H11 through H17. Any, Commissioner Eckert?
This is Commissioner Ackerman. As I was reading this, I hadn't read the appendix yet, and so But now that I have, I see that the very first or the lowest option is very low for income levels. And mm-hmm. then you've got low mm-hmm. and then medium and then
middle
and then
high. Right.
And it seems like we have most of those in H11. Why can't we just move the very low from H12 just before low so that they're all together?
That's a great suggestion.
It
kind of gives us one less policy.
So we've got them all right there in the one.
How does everybody else feel about that? That's a good combined policy, H11 with H12. Yep. Well, that happens. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. So, good. How about any more on H13?
Yeah, Commissioner Eckberg. Mm-hmm. Now, on H13, it says, examine. This is getting back to what I saw in the previous session where it says, let's look at this, but not actually do anything.
Yeah.
So, if you look at H13, it says, examine ways to eliminate unnecessary and excessive requirements. Why don't we just say, eliminate unnecessary requirements.
I like
that. Let's look at it.
How do you guys all feel about that? That's better. Okay. You're on a roll. Keep going. These are good.
Well, there's one other minor thing. It says, so what I would word at H13 is, eliminate unnecessary or excessive requirements that create barriers to affordable housing, period.
Okay.
We have unnecessary words.
Do you want that this May or just period?
Oh, just period. And then this May and the rest of it.
Okay.
Just get rid of if they exist.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
Commissioner Pepper, Councilmember Pepper, this may include any excessive requirements regarding, I'm seeing, what is that word?
Siting.
Okay, all right, that's it.
Talking about close proximity, it's not a big city.
Well, our community centers are supposed to be theoretically walked to for a lot of things you need, but I don't think we're saying you have to be able to walk to healthy food.
Okay, Councilmember Pepper, I just would like to say that I'm not sure where this information came from, but I do know that one of the goals of higher density is to avoid food deserts.
Yeah.
Where there is no food available. And so maybe I don't know if that has to do with this, but it might.
Like if you're a 14-year-old kid and you have to walk to a store, they're not providing you food at home.
How about we just take healthy out?
We could, or I think services.
I think this is sounding too much like Michelle Obama.
So what we're trying to say is,
need to be able to get to their job.
Well, that's covered by close proximity to multimodal transportation opportunities. That way they can go anywhere they want.
So maybe we just take close proximity to and take out employment and healthy food or services. How do you guys want to do it?
Housing.
Well, but you also have to look at it from the perspective of don't look at it today. You've got to look at it 5 to 10 to 15 years from now. One of the ways that that might happen, too, is allowing for looking at your rules for home occupation or maybe allowing some of the things that people have trouble with is if you don't let little daycares in these neighborhoods, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, we all know that. I mean, my only comment was, where's the map? And I think we're working on the map, aren't we?
So
that's what this has all got to be mapped eventually.
I like the idea of taking out employment and healthy food and just affordable housing in proximity to multimodal transportation.
The difference in taking that out is we're saying if you take that out and just say transportation, you're saying the affordable housing person that lives in affordable housing is going to be able to get on a going to go somewhere else. This one says they could get to jobs.
Let's take for example the trailer park.
Mm-hmm.
They're in close proximity to healthy food. They're in close proximity. They're in close proximity to multimodal transportation.
Where are they going to?
There's a bus stop right out.
Yeah.
Side. There's the grocery store down the street that has those businesses right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that the kind of thing that's referring to? Is that, okay, well, that's close proximity.
Yeah. Paul?
Well, and then the whole idea is looking forward. Let's say in the villages, they have different types of houses. And they also have, they want it to be a walkable community where they have services and employment and affordable housing. So it makes sense to look forward at the issue to say that as they're doing affordable housing, making sure that those other services are available.
Certainly the main services, you know, food, hair cutting, lattes.
Affordable housing next to lattes.
Affordable housing, you can afford lattes.
Healthy food, put services. Okay. Any comments on 16 and 17?
I'm not real.
I saw lattes. It's only healthy food.
Have you even got that milk? And decaf coffee.
Let's see. I'm not sure about H17.
Offering regulatory incentives. Yeah, incentives. This is
this is one that's really the probably the most debatable in my mind on the page. So regulatory incentives such as priority processing of permits, fee waivers, reductions to builders who provide very low or low to moderate income housing for seniors or other special needs. Need households. Ensure that affordable housing achieved through public incentives or assistance remains affordable for the longest possible term. Yeah, this is the one that really gets down to, is that something that the city wants to try to work toward?
Somebody has a lot that they own for 20 years and they want to build a house for themselves or something. They're going to get put on the back burner of the permitting process, and they're going to get higher fees and everything for somebody to come in and build, you know, buy five or six lots and build
a senior center. So is that the policy direction that we want to take?
Well, I would think that would only come into play when
ooh, so we could, if you wanted to say that that would be a tool, priority processing, you would say only when.
Right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to say, it sounds like you're trying to say we want to be the Mecca for low-income housing.
Low.
So let's take this apart, though. We've said a couple of things using it's a laundry list. And maybe we don't want to say all these things.
The city could offer instead of should offer. Maybe.
Yeah.
It would be
like a financial commitment to the city's participation on a budget level in this
document. How about should consider and not should offer?
I mean, what I wrote down right off the top of my head is we're nowhere near being able to do this. And we would be remiss in doing it until we have a level of social services and transportation and local jobs to keep up, you know,
mm-hmm.
to make this possible for our population to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when you say the city should consider regulatory incentives, because you're not going to do it until we need to.
Yeah.
The fact is we're going to get it to a point that we can get that line where they say we have to have affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no number or whatever attached to it, but you just get to a certain point and then they're going to say we have to have affordable housing.
Well, and we'll know it as the city body decision makers. You guys are going to know when you've got a problem.
Well,
my question is, could versus should. We want to open it up a little bit more and say could consider regulatory incentives.
May
should.
May, I like May.
May works too.
Mm-hmm. I like May.
I want to make sure that we don't get stuck in a legal language issue here.
Just don't use shall.
Don't use shall.
How about May?
May is very good because that's discretionary.
Yeah.
May is discretionary.
Should it be May or Mike?
May.
So are we priority processing of permits? Yeah, is that a good one or not?
May.
Yeah, as long as it's all may consider.
Fee waivers?
Then,
I think fee reductions. I don't know that a fee waiver I would want to be a proponent of, but fee
reduction. Okay, so we get rid of waiver?
Yeah.
Okay.
Commissioner Eckert, I think part of what was stated but not written is the conditions where this would apply. I think we need to say something on the order of these may apply when we're when our stock in the
right
low, very low, low or moderate income housing levels.
That's what Commissioner Senegal was.
But we need to say it. I don't think I saw that.
Yeah, but it's part of the statistics that were in the index. I think it's part. It was part included in that.
Well, we're talking about offering priority processing, reduction of, and we didn't say anything like that in the appendix, whereas I think we need to state the conditions where this, these benefits would apply.
To meet, yeah, or to meet affordable share targets or to meet the
something
targets.
On that order. I'm not sure of the exact wording.
So, Councilmember, so are we saying that we don't have this meet now? Is that what we're saying? Is that what I hear you saying?
No, I'm saying, well, perhaps. I don't know. It sounds like we do have a need now, but if we reach a point where we don't need it, we have when we have sufficient of these low-income housing categories, then we shouldn't have the benefits that apply when those conditions do not exist. When needed would be fine. We don't need to say why.
Okay, where is the when needed? Okay. When needed. Yes.
So when somebody comes up to, this is Councilmember Dee, to City Hall and says, I'd like to build a senior facility, and in your comp plan, it has this H17, and let's say they came up, you know, after the comp plan was passed, whenever it gets passed. And so what would staff say then? You know, I mean, because I think it's needed now. I think all of these issues are needed today. So I guess that what I'm hearing from you is that it's not needed until another 3,000 come in or something. So
no,
I'm just wondering how,
no, I agree
how
with
it would
you.
Go through the planning area. How would they say, well, the council voted this in, so it wasn't.
Well, you have to have a mechanism is
yes,
what you're saying.
Yes,
if we say when needed, what's our mechanism?
Yes,
how do we?
Mechanism.
Yeah.
So
more
low-income
housing is needed.
So your point is well taken. Commissioner Egbert, your point is well taken, and I agree with you. Today we need it. Okay. Next year, between now and next year, we may have plenty of. I'm just hypothesizing. Let's hypothesize that next year, between now and next year, we have filled out those needs that we are not meeting today, and we reach a point of, okay, well now we need to have other kinds of housing.
Available. Instead of when needed, we should just say as needed.
As needed.
Mm-hmm.
As needed.
Well,
means
essentially,
but it sounds.
So as needed is to be today, tomorrow. When needed is suggesting
today.
It's
in the future.
Like maybe not today. Yeah.
Oh, Commissioner Amber here.
As needed based on.
But then they've got to have somebody that's going to do it. I mean, if it's needed, and I'm not arguing that it's not needed, but we can't force anybody to do it.
No, but it's
whether
or not we're
going to
offer
it.
Well, it's needed now, but there's nobody applying.
Right. But if somebody does, then you can use these incentives. That's all it says.
Yeah, let's say that somebody takes a piece of property in downtown, a private person. They could develop that.
Right.
As well as
I'm
maybe we are, and this is maybe be clarifying a little bit. So some of you people know we have a city block in Victoria, right on the edge of the historical district, and we're getting ready to rehab our block. And we went to the city and told them we want to rehab the block, and we want to keep the downstairs, you know, the ground floor as shops. It's in a place where there's 14 bus routes right next to our building. And they suggested to...
Are you speaking personally?
Yes, I am speaking personally.
Okay.
Victoria, British Columbia.
Oh.
And they...
Whereabouts?
Douglas and Government, Johnson and Blanchard, that block. Anyway, they suggested that we would probably want to have, they would like us to put in condos upstairs. Actually, not really condos. They're condos, but they're apartments, because that's what they have the biggest need for. And they're telling us about what size they want them to be. And they're giving us very good incentives. Black Diamond's not going to be in this position. They're paying for it. Their historical society is paying for the planning, and they're giving us 10 years of free taxes, no taxes.
How long do you have to commit that to being an affordable housing unit?
It isn't going to be affordable.
Oh, it's not.
No.
It's just housing.
They're just dinky housing. It's just dinky housing. They're not affordable.
Wow. That's interesting. So I think we got H17 that we're gonna may consider as needed and crossing off that seniors. I think we got that one done. How about
Barbara, excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Regarding H17, I think the part that says ensure that affordable housing achieved through public incentives or assistance remains affordable for the longest possible term. You know, I don't know that we want to legislate that part. I would be okay with striking that.
Just remains affordable?
Or not even? Well, I think if these are going to be privately built, we can't really legislate that.
Otherwise, they won't get built.
The whole thing.
Right, because it's going to be privately owned property. So I would... I don't know how we can put the city in that position to ensure that it remains affordable, that term being always flexing, for the longest possible
time. You would have to say it was achieved through public funds, that you'd have to set a specific time period, 5 years, 10 years, or whatever. You'd have to put a specific time period.
So, for example, we're just going to be giving them a fee waiver or a fee reduction that we then assume some responsibility for the other part?
Yeah, otherwise you're 15.
Yeah, you can't give
treatment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have to put in a time period or some restriction.
And they would have to restrict the deed.
Yeah, and that would be part of the deed.
Okay. I think when it becomes... You know, the things that come into what remains affordable is maintenance, utilities. I mean, I think we get into a really big area of having to assure it remains affordable for the longest possible term. I think that just doesn't sit well.
I think the longest possible term is not a good phrase. Not a good phrase.
Why don't you just strike that last phrase, the longest possible term, and put a period after affordable, and then
that it remains.
That's forever.
You're talking rent.
You do have to have
regulations that cover that. It doesn't have to be in this stuff.
For a reasonable period of time. Reasonable?
No, that's two.
Two. Okay.
I think you need to scratch that whole sentence off.
I don't think.
Because if the city is involved in adjusting rates.
So, Councilmember Deedy here. So, we've all heard, you know, in Seattle they have this issue. So when people got incentives or whatever, however they got to be where they have affordable housing, and then they've sold, and now that contract doesn't follow with the other people, and they've turned it to be more higher-end living. So you've got those lower-income families that are chased out and trying to find places out here or other areas. So I strongly say that if you should leave that sentence in, because if you're going to give taxpayer money to a group or individual to build an affordable living area, then it should have some earmark of saying how long that needs to stay affordable, whether it's as long as they own it or how, whatever. But I think that once you're giving incentives to build that, you don't want to be able to say, okay, we give you the incentive, but then in 2 months they start jacking the price up.
Can't you build that into the title of
the deed? Another way you can do it.
I think you cross off age 17 and consider age 16.
Something that just happened in Seattle, I mean, was that a building was given incentives to years ago to be affordable housing and fixed up for low-income apartments or whatever. And it was supposed to last through, let's just say, 2030. New people bought the building and paid off difference to the city in what it would have cost to
incentives.
They bought out the incentives, saying these incentives, here's your money back, no thanks. That's just something
that's sort of like open space. If you change your mind, you have to pay you back.
Council Member Pepper, I also have to, you have to remember that if we have to maintain a certain percentage of low income housing, the minute that you turn something out that was low income housing and now it's not anymore, then you're not meeting your quota anymore and you have to build more. So I think that's something you might want to think about.
Determines land to be surplus and is suitable for housing. So that is essentially taking open space and saying that this open space that, let's just say, for example, define developments going in the MPDs with their required open space, let's say in 20 or 30 years, now is that open space public or privately held?
Are you talking about 19?
Yeah.
This isn't open space. Public land is not open space. It's not open space. You can't take open space once it's been designated.
Okay. Public land could be, let's say, the city.
The city's garage or the gym?
Yeah, exactly, the garage.
And we have pieces of vacant land in the city that belong to the city.
Okay.
So there are pieces now that belong to the city.
Okay.
Which says if the city decided they were going to surplus it, then if it could be a suitable site for housing, then we would consider.
Would you put it on the market and sell it with a caveat that it would be used for low income housing?
It gets you back to that one we struck where you would be providing some kind of an incentive.
Well, this is kind of like the donut hole in Maple Valley situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
King County gave it to Maple Valley, mm-hmm. or transferred it to Maple Valley, and now Maple Valley is going to, I don't know what they're going to do with it.
They built high school there.
Well, I thought the donut hole was further down.
No, the high school is being built.
There's still part of it, but that whole donut hole area is where the high school is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought it was down by Rock Creek.
No.
Mm-hmm.
That forest across from Rock Creek.
That's legacy property in Maple Valley.
He's
talking about the city shopping stuff just before you get to the school site.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Maple Valley.
That's part of the donut hole. Part of the donut hole is part of the high school.
Okay.
Can we focus on what we're here for? Commissioner Eckhart.
Okay. I got Councilmember Dean. So I was talking to Barb here about 19. So I guess I didn't understand really. So if it kind of goes back to H17. So if the city sells land to a developer and says that we're only going to sell it to you because you're going to build affordable housing.
Yeah, we probably just
need that. Because then you're saying, so then that would always have to be that way.
It's the same situation. Yeah. Okay, striking 19. So then any comment on 20, 21, or 22?
Yeah, so Commissioner Eckhart.
Mm-hmm.
You look at H20,
mm-hmm.
and you look at H11.
Are they the same?
They're almost the same thing.
Okay. So, fair share, 11 and 12. Maybe we strike 20.
Yeah. I agree.
Perfect.
Strike them all.
That makes it easy. So this one is working with King County. Did we say King County of 11? Yep. That's fair share. Yeah, they're a little bit different. H21 is really getting down to that countywide, being consistent with the countywide policies. We may want to leave that one in there because remember we have to. Okay. Okay, 22.
Well, we're kind of mixing them out. If you look at H22
mm-hmm.
and H2, they're different goals. That's why I was kind of iffy on that.
How do you do that?
If we're already struck out everything else
mm-hmm.
about trying, how do you preserve the existing affordable housing? How do you get your renters to
Yeah, see, we're kind of saying that we're not going to go down that path of trying to do a housing program. We're not going to try to... Okay, then our goal to recognize the need for and support housing for special needs. So this one is specific to knowing, you know, that we have a need and that we're going to support special need populations. Any comments on 23, 24, 25? Mm-hmm. Well, that's where the largest county is. It says striking 22. Council member Deedy said maybe we could just say encourage on instead of striking policy H22.
Yeah, maybe we could just say encourage preserving existing affordable housing.
Well, we've already done that on H12. You don't need to do bingo.
So, any more comments, or we did it?
This is Commissioner Eckert. Maybe I'm just dense, but that last goal talks about special needs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that enumerated in the appendix, or do we need to enumerate what those special needs are? It's kind of a general term.
We could put a definition.
If I read through the policies, I can kind of deduce what they are, but it'd be a lot clearer if we said.
I mean, the federal government has definitions for special needs, and maybe we.
That would be a good place
just
to look.
Just look there. Yeah.
So she'll go ahead and revise these.
Yes.
Then, like we did before, we'll just go over it and see if there's anything you can do for the last.
Yes, and same, and you'll have the, I didn't have the natural environment from the last meeting ready for you tonight, so you'll have the revised stuff from last month, this revised. For our next month's meeting, which is May 10th, and then we'll do capital facilities and economic development.
About our particular community, I'm wondering about how soon we think that we're going to need to have some sort of a laundry shower facility for homeless people. How responsible are we going to be for the folks who live out at the gorge? And then for senior citizens, a chore corps that goes around and helps them. Meals on wheels, home visits, that kind of thing. I understand. But it is, well, yeah, but it's the services end of it. Well, it's, we're talking about all these social.
Yeah, but it's land use,
housing,
so facilities. Or,
I mean, shower facility for homeless.
Well, H23 says support development of emergency transition.
Right. It's in there.
For appropriate services. So I do think the shower facility is addressed in H23.
Okay.
And then the seniors, I'm not sure that that really is pertains to housing. I'm thinking maybe in an...
Well, it services for people with special needs throughout the city and region.
Yeah.
Support opportunities for older adults to keep them in their own housing.
Well, that would certainly be a seniors' meals on wheels and things.
That's supported by the Black.
Well, I understand that. I understand that.
And the Black community.
That's right. And how much? And how? And as the population ages, how much has their capacity got to grow?
Well, we're expecting Oak Point to build them a new community center when they develop their walkable community. Or at least provide the land.
Our community center, considering the resources that they have.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Do a fantastic job. And it's not just the meals on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's the vouchers to get people over that month until they get their next payday or whatever.
Right, right.
But that's the social engineering portion of
that goal.
Yeah. Well, if you're just noticing, there's a big marriage of affordable housing and services on 304th, just east of 124th, over by Green River College, because the King County Housing Authority built about a 12-story place, a low-income apartment complex right next to the small grocery store. And it's a really, I think it's worked out well. But it's a good land use of giving people who have limited opportunities for transportation, especially for services.
So was there anybody that wanted to make public comment?
Seeing no one, I understand.
I make a motion to adjourn this meeting. Adjourn. Adjourn or adjourn? Both.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.